Welcome to Unsquish the Fish, the podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff. Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
We suck. God, this is ridiculous. I cannot believe. I can't believe what's going on right now in South Florida. I cannot believe that is the Miami Dolphins, 2015 Miami Dolphins. If somebody had told me this is the way the first three games had played out and like bet me money, I would have lost everything I own. I would have lost it all. My house, they'd have my house, my wife, my kids. They'd own it all right now. If somebody told me this is how it's going to play out, I would have just bet my everything I had that there's no way this is the way it play out. Anyway, obviously you're listening to Unsquish the Fish, and it's so properly named after getting destroyed by the Bills. But I think I'm going to do a little addendum to the name and call it Unsquish the Blowfish, because we freaking blow. That's what's going on right here. All right, I'm here today with Keith. It's been a while since he's been on. My boy Keith, what's going on, man?
What's up, Ron? How's it going, man? I'm glad to be back, dude.
Don't you wish we were meeting under better circumstances?
Don't I ever, man. Don't I ever.
I tell you what, I can't believe it feels like three games into the season, it feels like the season's over. It really feels that way. Am I overreacting?
Ron, I'm just going to throw it out here. I mean, obviously the listeners, they can't see where I'm at, but I'm actually in my four-year-old stepdaughter's bedroom doing this podcast with you. And I think it's very fitting because, of course, like many four-year-old girls, they're all into Frozen. They love the Frozen. So I think it's fitting for me to be in here because I'm going to say one term that's going to sum up our season. Let it go. Because that's
let
what
it
we
go,
need to do.
Let it go. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
That's exactly what we need to do. We need to let the coaching staff go. We need to let the season go, you know.
Let the players go.
I mean, Ron, I'm going to be honest, man. A lot of times we get into some disagreements about football because a lot of times
yeah,
you
do.
Want a bunch of people I don't think that needs to be playing.
We get into more disagreements about basketball, but we do get
true.
We get into some disagreements about football for sure.
We get into disagreements because of you wanting to blame certain people for it, but I think this is one time that we're going to be in agreement for the most part, and that is the coaching staff has got to go.
Oh God!
I mean,
they suck so bad.
They have to go. And Joe Philblow, I mean, we really
Philblow.
he's not the man for this team. And honestly, there are some people that just need to stay coordinators. That's the reason they're coordinators. That's what they need to stay. They do not need to be head coaches. He's not motivational. He doesn't fire anybody up. And I have trouble saying that because there's a phenomenal coach. Ex-coach that could still coach named Tony Dungy.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Don Shula. He can do it from the wheelchair better than Philbin's doing right now.
Oh, dude, absolutely. You made a good comment today during a text message that a fathead could coach this team better.
A fathead of Vince Lombardi. Yeah, I tweeted that out too. A Vince Lombardi fathead could coach this team better right now than Joe Philbin.
And the sad part is, Ron, I don't – when I look at this, and I mean I looked at some of the numbers from the game, and they're sickening, man. They make my stomach churn because I think of all this hype and all this promise of what the Dolphins were going to be this year, and they're garbage. They are garbage on the football field, and it's just I can't fathom. I just can't. And then of course Tannehill comes out and says, "We need to fix these problems today."
Yeah, you think?
Dude.
You can't fix all those in a week, in a month.
You ain't fixing this in a day. You ain't fixing this in a month.
You know what? Most of these problems you're not fixing this year, honestly. Most of the problems we got going on right now is not getting fixed this year because here's the problem. part of the issue is, I mean, it's like a Pandora's box or something like that. You got players that don't trust the coaches, so they don't play well, and then they don't play well, so we start to lose. So then who's going to go in and try and fix that? The coaches, but they're going to listen to them even less, so they're going to play even worse, so they're going to lose even more. And then it's just a circle of death, man. It's just a big circle of death. You know, Philbin could be the best coach in the NFL. Right now, it wouldn't matter. The players don't trust him. They don't listen to him. So you might as well cut bait and move on because they don't listen to him.
If you don't believe in your coach, you're not going to play football because you don't believe the game plan that he's come up with is good enough to beat the team that you're playing. End of story. And bottom line, it's just to the point, man, where it's like, you know, I watched a little bit of the game yesterday, you know, as much as I could before I got nauseous and had to go to the bathroom.
But you were listening to my awesome broadcast instead.
I was listening to the awesome broadcast that you were doing. And, you know, that was the exciting point of the game for me, was listening to my boy on the broadcast. But I was watching the defensive player's body language. And it's just not there. It's like they're out there because they know they have to be, because there's no NFL team going to forfeit a game. But it was just like they don't want to tackle. They don't want to put themselves in the way of a runner. They don't want to try to go after a pass that's thrown.
Did you see – was it Akins and Taylor or Akins and McCain? And then when you saw Brent Grimes just like run from the other side of the field, try and stop it, which, you know, he did the Derek Jeter type thing where he just – you run it as fast as you can to first base every time no matter what kind of thing.
Exactly.
He even though he had not a chance, he went Don Beebe on him trying to catch Leon Lett. But you saw what Akins and I think it was Taylor or McCain just give up on the play. They didn't even care. It was horrible. They didn't,
and that's a disgrace. I mean, it really, it's a disgrace to the organization. It's a disgrace to the fans. And listen, people can argue this all they want to. You know, the players, when the players are losing, they don't give a you know what about the fans. They could care less. They don't care how the fans feel. They don't care that the fans have spent money to come in there. So I've seen a lot of people posting about how, you know, that's a disgrace, the money that the fans spend. Players don't care about that. They don't care. They don't care. Because either way, they're going to get paid. And I'm not saying it to where the players have no heart. But when you play the way you played in front of your hometown, your home fans, on opening your home opener, and you get waxed. I mean, you get waxed by a Buffalo Bills team that just got waxed by New England last week. Now, understand, I realize that we're no New England. I get that. And Tannehill's no Tom Brady. But I heard Skip Bayless today put blame on Tannehill.
Okay. Well, I mean, I hate to say it in this case and this week. And by the way, Skip Bayless is not a Tannehill fan. And when
not
he
at
takes,
all.
And when he
not
takes a position on something, when he takes a position on somebody right after the draft, anything that's going to make his case, he is going to throw that out there, no matter what the previous results were or future results, it doesn't matter. But in this case, Tannehill did not play well yesterday. He played very badly. He missed a lot of open receivers. He threw some bad passes. I understand he's under duress. But he did not handle it well. The pressure, the continuous pressure in his face, the continuous running for his life, it all got to him mentally yesterday. It broke him down yesterday.
I'm gonna say this, Ron, and I'm not gonna disagree with you completely on this. And I've been a big Tannehill supporter. When we did a podcast on Tannehill, I hyped that boy up, and I'm not gonna say that he's not without some blame. I'm not.
Not. I mean, yesterday definitely he's got some blame.
I did some research. I did just real quick before, you know, the podcast. And this season in three games, we've had 141 pass plays. And I don't even know if you know these numbers.
I don't. I mean, after seeing yesterday's game, I didn't need to look at numbers. But I am curious about what you're about to say, so continue on.
We've run 141 pass plays in three games. 49 of those pass plays, he has been under duress.
And where are you pulling now, those numbers from, by the way? I'm curious.
I pulled these numbers from Bleacher Report. I pulled some of these numbers from NFL.com.
None of them are from AcmeFootball.com, right?
No.
I'm just kidding.
No. No. But that basically boils down to every three times.
Okay, I got to stop you again for a second. Okay. You're back in Florida. We don't say bowls anymore. We say boils. I was letting it slide when you were in Tennessee, but you're back in FLA. Let's talk like you're from here. Okay, continue on. What's it boil down to?
It boils down to every three times that Tannehill drops back, he's in trouble, and he's running for his life. Now, don't get me wrong. That's fine. Every three times. That means in a series of downs, there's usually three downs. So that means once every series, every four downs, he's under duress. Now, some people say, okay, well, if you do four downs, that's only 25% of the time. Okay, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but the fourth down doesn't count.
Exactly. The fourth down doesn't count. So now your percentage just went way up. And I just – another thing – I'm going to throw out the penalties.
Oh, yeah. That's – the penalties this year are killing us.
The three turnovers that Miami had yesterday – I'm going to go out on a limb and say two of them were not Tannehill's fault.
Two of the interceptions, you mean?
The interceptions that he threw were not his fault.
Well, the one to Landry definitely was not his fault. He threw that right in the numbers. It was just a
and the one bad. That was batted at the line. I mean, that's a freak thing that happens.
I don't know. I don't think it was batted at the line though. The one he threw to the line. You're talking about the one he threw to the linebacker directly, right at the line of scrimmage?
No. That's all him.
You're talking about the one he threw out deep.
Yes.
I didn't realize that ball was batted. I was wondering why the heck it went out funny like that.
And that's just it. Can you blame the quarterback for throwing a batted ball?
I will give you an explanation of all the batted balls. I might have said this on a previous podcast, so if I'm repeating myself. And by the way, I got this from Ian Wharton at NFL Film Study, so I don't like to take credit for something that wasn't mine. He explained very clearly that with Tannehill, they know they throw the ball quickly. So the defensive linemen are taught to count in their head. 1, 2, and if I haven't gotten to him, my hand's going up. That's number one. Number two, they throw a lot of shallow short routes in Miami, which causes less a lower height on the ball. You combine those two things, and that's why you have so many batted balls.
Right. Okay. And that explains it. So, I mean, I don't – did Tannehill have his best game? Absolutely not.
No, that was that first half rivaled his first half ever against Houston. Really.
But – I'm going to say this. In our first two games, I would say that Tannehill put that team on his shoulders and took us as far as we were able to go.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's just not quite elite yet to be able to just do it on his own. He's not,
of course not.
Aaron Rodgers or Brady where he could take us a roster of 52 other guys like we have now and just say, come with me, I'm going to get us this win no matter how bad y'all are playing.
But then again,
he's not quite good enough to do that.
Most quarterbacks don't hit that stretch until 5 to 7 years in the league.
Dude, so many quarterbacks never hit that. You could probably only name 5, 6 guys right now that can do that on a consistent basis. Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. I'm probably missing one or two. I'm sorry. Who else am I missing that we would consider elite guy? Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
And, I mean, who else is like that? Maybe Joe Flacco sometimes, but not lately. Not consistently.
Well, look at Andrew Luck. This is a prime example.
Andrew Luck is struggling right now.
He's struggling right now. So
defenses are catching back up with offenses is some of it, too.
Absolutely. And that's
always does. The defenses, and I kind of think I said this before, the defenses in the NFL in general are starting to get used to playing under the current rules, and they're also getting used to some of this spread offense stuff that, if you notice, the spread offense stuff didn't really come into the league until the rules changed. And then you could run a lot more stuff over the middle and you could keep guys safer and not get their heads knocked off. And then all of a sudden you got the Chip Kellys of the world coming in that look like geniuses. But guess what? Those defensive coordinators beyond ours are pretty smart too. 31 of them are pretty smart and they figure things out. And I think that's just an example we're seeing throughout the league. And we're also struggling on offense due to that. Defenses are, do we look so predictable out there? It's ridiculous. I mean, I sat there and said before that, and if you heard the beginning of the broadcast, I said what I did not want to see. Before the broadcast started, I said, I don't want to see us going 5 wide and leaving just those 5 linemen to block against those 4 defensive linemen for Buffalo, or it's going to be a long day. And I swear the first play they did that. They did it like 60% of the time. Every time I was calling out, guess what? Five wide, empty backfield again. I mean, come on. The defenses have figured that out, especially Buffalo.
Well, I mean, and that's just it. You know, defenses always come along faster than the offense. And that's just football. That's the way it is, because it's somewhat easier to play a defense than it is an offense, only because you've got route running, you got blocking assignments. In defense, you're just going after who's got the ball. And a lot of times you're playing a lot of zone. If you do play man-to-man, it's simply lock down your man. That's what you do. That's your job. So defenses come along faster. But, you know, that's where it goes to coaching, you know. Laser, I mean, the vanilla play calling, the predictable play calling, I mean, you got to mix it up. The offensive plays that were called yesterday are some of the same exact spitting image plays that you saw against Washington and you saw against Jacksonville. It's the same place, and you're going to get those. I get it. I understand you're going to have those same plays. But, I mean, when you're going against a defense like Buffalo, okay, I mean, look, dude. You're 1-1 going into this game. It's your home opener, and you've got nobody in the backfield to help protect Tannehill.
No, with that large percent of the time,
with that front four of Buffalo, are you kidding me?
Yeah, and even when they put somebody in the backfield, a couple of times they even had two in the backfield. It was usually Landry and Williams, or Landry and Miller. And I'll give some credit to Max Himmelrich from the deep end Miami. He actually kind of called out that they might do something like that, and then said maybe I'm just dreaming. They actually did put Landry in the backfield a lot and do some things with it, but it was always so obvious. Every time they put Landry in the backfield, it was always to him. It was like it was never a ploy or anything like right. that.
And you know, another thing that I looked at was penalty wise. This team is getting penalized, and a lot of it, I think, is just it's a lack of discipline. When you get penalties, it's a lack of discipline, period. End of story.
Yeah, there's when you no get a lot that many penalties, I agree.
We already in three games have been penalized 25 times.
Did you see what a ranking on that? Because the last 2 years, we were the least penalized team in the league.
Yes.
With the same coach, so I don't know what all of a sudden happened there.
I mean, that I can't explain that one, but those 25 penalties have cost us 187 yards. Now, last year, total for the entire season, we were only penalized 81 times.
The entire season. So we're about one-third of the way there already through three games.
Through three games. Yeah. And that's a lack of discipline. Now, that could be from a number of things. That could be if, you know, obviously the players are frustrated. Because let's face it, these are professionals. They're getting paid to go out there and play a game. Nobody wants to go out there and lose every Sunday. You don't want to lose to a Jacksonville. You know, you would love to be able to go into your home opener and beat a very strong Buffalo team. Nobody wants to lose it. I mean, nobody wants to lose that.
I got to be honest with you. I haven't seen this team come out yet from the first minute that looked like they gave a crap about winning or losing. For a lot of them. Some of them, yes, play like they got a lot of heart. Tannehill obviously does. Landry does. Brent Grimes does. Some of these guys go out and play to win or lose. And I feel a lot of them are just enjoying some South Florida life, enjoying their money. Like every free agent that's walked in this place in the last 5-6 years, that's all they've done. Is come in here, enjoy a little contract money, enjoy South Florida, enjoy the women, enjoy the beaches, enjoy the drinks, and half-ass their football career while they kick it back in South Florida on Miami Dolphins and Stephen Ross's dime. I'm sorry, but that's what Brandon Marshall, Mike Wallace, Sue, I mean, the only free agent I can even name that has really come in and done something, but he still had so much to prove, was Brent Grimes. We brought him in on a one-year contract. It's not like we brought him in on a 4 or 5 year deal. He played his way to that deal, you know, and he's got pride. His wife, obviously, as we saw, did you see what happened to his wife yesterday?
Yeah.
That's why you don't mess with me on Twitter. Sorry. I'm just kidding.
She's got more heart than the team does, but I mean,
she's got as much stupidity though. She belongs with the Miami Dolphins coaching staff.
True.
Just a big loud mouth, but not really saying much. Kind of like a lot of our coaches.
But another problem that I saw was, do you know on defense who our leading tackler was yesterday?
On defense, our leading tackler.
Take a wild guess.
God, I don't even know. It wasn't Rashad Jones. He disappeared. Maybe Koa Misi. I don't even know, to tell you the truth.
Actually, it was Jones with what? 9 solo tackles.
Oh, interesting. You know, I didn't really see Jones pop yesterday, but I think he was mostly tackling it back in the defensive backfield and not making those big plays at the line of scrimmage like he had the first two games.
Which tells me that if your safety is making a majority of your tackles, there's a problem. That's because how many broken tackles were there yesterday on pass plays for Buffalo? I was actually on Skype with you, I think, when they threw to a tight end and there was two like just absolutely ridiculous attempts at a tackle before I don't even know his name. I know it was number 85 before he just waltzed into the end zone.
85, I believe. Are you talking about was that Charles for Buffalo. Clay? Isn't that Clay? Isn't that his new number?
Was it Clay? I don't know if it was Clay. it may have been Clay.
Doesn't he look so weird in a Buffalo uniform? Like, that doesn't even look right.
Yeah, he does. But, I mean, he was definitely the Claymaker yesterday.
Yeah, he was the Claymaker.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, everybody rubbed it in our face yesterday. Incognito rubbed it in our face. Even 7-Eleven, Chris Hogan got in on the deal and caught a freaking touchdown, dude. Of course. Everybody, the ghost of the Dolphins past, came back to haunt us as usual. Next week, or this coming week, we get to deal with Todd Bowles and Brandon Marshall. You know they're going to probably win by 35 points, and Brandon Marshall's going to catch 4 touchdowns on us.
Well, I got news for you. If that happens, and Joe Philbin is on the plane back from London, there needs to be a riot in the streets of Miami. But the issue that we run into with that is this. Who are we going to replace him with? Our defensive coordinator is garbage.
Garbage.
Our offensive coordinator is garbage.
Garbage.
So who do you put in there? You put the linebackers coach in there?
No, Rizzi.
Put the defensive lines coach?
The special teams coach, Rizzi.
Well, I mean,
that's who you put in there. I mean, I'm not telling you he's going to come coaches into the playoffs, but he's the only one with any passion that makes sense that could turn this around. But the question is, and I've been asking myself all day, Dolphins fans have been asking all day, we've been seeing the tweets all day, at what point does Ross decide to make a switch? How bad does it have to get? Is it 1-3 and we're headed to our bye week from London? Still seems a little soon. Is it after 2 losses straight to Tennessee and Houston before we go on our road trip at 1-5? Or do you wait all the way till the 3-game road trip where you got to play the Patriots, you got to play the Bills, and you got to play Philadelphia back to back to back on the road, and then you're 1-8, and then decide on November 15th or 16th, I believe the game's on the 15th, that you go ahead and do it then at 1-8. That kind of feels like the place where you're going to do it. Of course, by that point, it's probably going to be too late. Not that I think you could save the season by doing it anyway, but it would definitely be too late then. It would just be a statement like, okay, 1-8, you're gone. Kind of like what happened with Wonstad. You know, you're done, dude.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. My personal opinion is the sooner the better. I think that, you know, I disagree with you on the fact of doing it going into our bye week. I think that that's the perfect time to do it.
I'm not saying that it's not the perfect time. It's what I wish they'd do it right now. I'm just telling you what's realistic and what actually has a chance of happening. To me, it's either maybe at 1-5. Again, I hate to just assume that, but when you see this team play the way we saw them play, I don't see how we win another game. I got to be honest with you. We're a Landry punt return away from being 0-3 right now. And praying to God that it's not a repeat of 07, where we're begging for the ghost of Greg Camarillo to come and save us again in December against Baltimore, which we do play this year in December, by the way. I'm not saying it's not what I want. I'm just telling you, I don't think he does it then. I just don't see that happening. It doesn't happen like that. And somebody got all pissy with me on Twitter yesterday because I disagreed. That he disagreed with me. I'm saying I'm not telling you it shouldn't happen. I'm telling you in the NFL, that's not usually how it's done. You rarely see coaches on the hot seat cut that soon into the season.
Well, and you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. If in my opinion, and obviously my opinion doesn't amount for much because I'm not getting paid, you know, millions of dollars a year to make these decisions like some people, but you do it going into the bye week. And the reason is because whatever coach you put in there, it gives him 2 weeks to basically get acclimated to being the head honcho and the man and get the players used to him. Because let's face it, if it is special teams coach,
Are the players used to him? Yeah, they're used to seeing him around the facility. But the special teams players are used to seeing him. The special teams players are used to seeing his motivation and his, you know, the way how animated he is and how he's this and that and this and that, and that's great. But the starters on offense and defense aren't used to seeing that. Because when you go to practice, special teams off on one end, offense is over here, defense is over there, then they'll come together. But usually special teams, you know, they kind of stay away. The special teams players that are the starters, obviously they're on offense and stuff like that. I get that. But I just – Stephen Ross, I mean, like I said this yesterday, Miami – and I hate to admit this as a Dolphin fan, we have one of the most fair weather based fan bases in the entire league.
Yeah, that's not exactly a secret, even to Dolphins fans.
You know, it's when we're winning, everybody's happy. When we're losing, oh, the team stinks. And
like you mean kind of, you mean kind of like what we've been saying the last 25 minutes?
Absolutely, absolutely.
In other words, we're part of that. We are those fans. Because 3 weeks ago, dude, not even 3 weeks ago if you did it by calendar days, 16 days ago, we thought we were winning the division and going to the playoffs and contending for a Super Bowl. And now we feel like we're 1-15 and we need to fire the coach. I mean, look, I'll admit I'm that way, but look at what we saw on the field. Tell me how I'm supposed to think anything different.
My biggest thing is before the season started and we talked about it, and, you know, I listened to a couple podcasts with you and Sean and a couple that we had done. And, you know, you were very amped up. You were hyped about the season. And I wasn't so much. As the season got closer, I started to get a little hyped up.
You bought into it. We were sold a bad bill of goods.
Exactly. I started to buy into it because I'm thinking, you know what? This offense could be nasty. The defense is going to be nasty. Yeah. And we even discussed it.
Nasty, all right.
It is. We even discussed it. We discussed it in one of our podcasts about the defense. With that defensive line, I remember specifically saying, if you double Cam, you leave Sue. If you double Sue and Cam, you leave Vernon. If you can't double team everybody. So our pass rush should be absolutely just ridiculous. But what pass rush?
Yep. non-existent. Like, we have one sack. One sack in three games, dude. And that sack was by a guy who was not even activated yesterday. He was inactive. Jordan Phillips, inactive yesterday. The only sack we have so far through three games.
And watching the games, a little bit of the game yesterday, and then, of course, Washington and Jacksonville, watching the games, it's almost like there's a protective bubble around every quarterback that we're playing. And it's called the pocket. And it's because the other teams that we're playing just seem to, I don't know how they're able to just keep our guys from penetrating the pocket at any point in time. We bring corners on the blitz, we get burned. We bring safeties on the blitz, we get burned. We try to just go with our front four, we get burned. We try to come with our linebackers, we get burned. It's just, it makes no, and this is the sad part, Ron.
There's just one? Okay.
This is what I'm looking at. There is no way this team turns it around this season. I have already chalked this season up to being done and over with. Okay? We need to lose to get a high draft pick and stop being mediocre 13, 14, 16 range. But when we start to play these teams, and when I say this, we played Kirk Cousins. Nothing against Kirk Cousins. I think he's a decent quarterback.
No, he's not. Know, but okay.
Listen, I said this. I said we had a better chance of beating Washington with RG3 quarterback, and then we did with Kirk Cousins.
I still agree that with that would have been the case because RG3.
That almost proved right. The guy in Jacksonville, Bortles, Blake Bortles.
Yeah. Yeah, we made him look like Tom Brady or something.
He's an average quarterback. He's got the potential to be a good quarterback, not a phenomenal one, I don't think, but he's an average quarterback, and we made him look like Tom Brady. Yesterday with Buffalo, I mean, really? Seriously? Lewis, not saying that he's a horrible guy, not saying he's a horrible quarterback.
Talking about Tyrod Taylor?
I mean, Taylor, excuse me. it's just the way this guy's throwing the ball on us, and I just
he's throwing to wide open guys, man. It ain't like he's throwing it in traffic. The guys are wide the freak open the whole game.
I look at this. When we play Flacco, when we play these other Brady.
I'm just scared, dude. I am scared to see what New England's going to do.
Do you remember a few years ago?
Oh, crap. They're going to destroy us.
When we played New England in Miami, and it was 42-0 at halftime.
Yes.
It's coming, dude.
Yeah.
It's coming again.
I know.
And the sad part is, Brady doesn't even have the caliber of receivers he had back then. And he's still going to torch this team. The Patriots are going to put 600 yards of offense on us. Easy.
They almost put 600 yards on offense against the team we played yesterday. And we that destroyed us.
So, I mean, Dolphin Nation, you know, all the Finn fans and the fanatics out there, you know, tighten your belt, you know, tighten the seatbelt, because this ride is going to get a lot worse. It's going to get worse quickly. I do not see it turning around, and I'm not trying to be negative Nancy on the podcast. I'm really not, but no offense to any ladies out there named Nancy, but
who may be negative.
Like I said at the start of the podcast, it's time to let it go, because this team is done. This team, all the hype and the hope and all that stuff, it's not going to change. It's not going to change. This is going to be what you're going to see for the rest of the season. You even said that in the last podcast you did.
Yeah, I said you need to reset your expectations of what this team would look like. I still felt like we could go through, looking at our schedule and some of these struggling teams, I still felt like we could go through and win a bunch of games ugly and get into the playoffs. I still felt that way. I do not, at this point, feel that way. I don't see how we win any games the way we're playing right now.
I mean, right now, I am scheduled to take a road trip to Tennessee to watch Miami play the Titans. And that is coming up the weekend of the 18th. And I'm going to tell you something, Ron. I'm sitting back right now thinking that if I didn't have friends up there to go visit, I would not be wasting my time or money to go up there. I wouldn't. Because Mariota is going to absolutely destroy us. And he's a rookie quarterback.
Isn't that sad? We're going to go up there and get waxed by a rookie quarterback.
We're going to get destroyed. We're going to get run out of Nashville. Right. We're going to get – and not only that, we've got Dick LeBeau, who's the defensive coordinator for Tennessee, who is going to work our offense.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, it's just – there is no light at the end of the tunnel. It is all dark. It is a huge pit that this team has fallen into. And, you know, the Sunshine State motto that Florida has is not designed for South Beach right now at all. At all. This team is through. I hate to say it.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Let's bring it off the field for a minute and say, as you see us, assuming this happens, and I'm sorry to just assume it, and I'm sure there's people listening thinking, what are you talking about? We're just 1-2. It was just one loss. It was a bad one. They're going to pick their heads up. They go, blah, 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 blah. I don't believe any of that, sorry. Because the team we saw can only be fixed by coaching, and coaching is the problem, not the solution. So what are you going to do there? That's the reason why I think it's done. But as we start to go 1-4, or 1-3, 1-4, 1-5, and the wheels really start to come off, how ugly is it going to get in that locker room? How bad are you going to hear the leaks and rumors about infighting, fighting between players, fighting offensive and defensive players fighting, coaches fighting, players fighting with coaches, you name it, confrontations, people being benched at halftime, people not doing what they're supposed to do. How ugly will it get? How quick will that happen? Because when this kind of thing happens, that's what you get. You get that kind of thing in South Florida, especially. And under this coaching staff, we have seen multiple examples of him not having any control of that locker room. Let's face it. And probably the biggest example in the history of the NFL has happened under this coach's watch about not having control, not knowing what was going on in his locker room. What do you think it's going to be like when we're 1-6, 1-7, 1-8 after we get waxed by Philly coming back from a 3-game road trip? What do you think that's going to look like? I'm telling you, all eyes will be on South Florida. We're going to see them on SportsCenter all the time. We're going to see them on Skip Bayless is going to, because he is a Dolphin hater. Do not kid yourself, people. Don't think he's just a great prognosticator. He hates the Dolphins. Congratulations, you were right. You would say the Dolphins sucked every year no matter what because you don't like the Dolphins, Skip Bayless. But he'll be talking crap every single week about us and Stephen A. Smith and NFL Network and you name it. They don't like the Dolphins anyway, and you know how I feel about it all. I mean, you've heard me talk about this before. Trust me. That's all you're going to hear about is the unraveling of Miami and South Florida. And I'm telling you, the pressure is going to get to Ross quick to make a change. It's going to be too late. By the time he makes a change, it'll be too late. You can't fire an entire coaching staff in the middle of the year and just replace them because that's absolute chaos. That cannot be done. It does not work that way. You can only fire the head coach, put in an interim coach that's already on the staff, and move on. That's all you can do. It doesn't help save your season. It just shows the, you know, it's only a symbol. You do that as a symbolism of, I'm with you, fans. I know you need a change, so here you go. You know, you get ahead of the curve of Black Monday, when the Monday after the last Sunday of the regular season, when all the crappy coaches like Philbin get fired, you get ahead of the curve so you get a jump on your new head coach. That's really the advantage you gain from it, because the season's over by the time you do it, just about no matter when you do it. That's just a fact.
The question is, Ron, we get rid of Philbin. We get rid of Philbin, and we don't want to go with a special teams coach. Okay, we want to bring in a big name person.
What are you talking about? In the middle of the season?
Let's just say start of next season.
Okay, start of next season. It's not going to be the special teams coach. It's going to be that's a whole different deal. It's going to be a whole wipeout. And honestly, but if you went 1-15 or 2-14, I'm sorry, Hickey, Tannenbaum, the whole freaking crew needs to go. You're all responsible for that crap. You know what I mean? You're all responsible for it. But that's a whole different story. I'm talking about a mid-season change right now.
Let me ask you this, though. Do you think that this team has talent on the field to win football games? Yes or no?
I mean, I feel like they do, but I just – South Florida, man, I don't know what it is. These guys get down to Miami, and they just don't want to play hard. I don't know. It's just a combination of a low-key coach who isn't very good, along with a history. We have seen a history of that for years now, man. For years under multiple coaches of free agents coming down to South Florida, getting their money and sitting on the beach with some beautiful women and some martinis. I mean, simple as that. It has become the South Florida way. We either get used so they can get money to go play or coach somewhere else, or we get used for a big contract and they live it up in South Florida. And I'm sorry, man. I'm starting to think that the new the South Florida lifestyle isn't fit to build a great organization anymore, man. I guess if you got the right coach, the right personnel, it can happen, but I'm starting to wonder because I'm seeing the same trend repeat itself over and over and over and over again now for 15 years.
Okay, well, the question to that is if that's the case, and I mean, I agree with you. I don't disagree with you at all with anything you just said. But if that's the case, what's the root cause? Because owner-wise, we've changed.
That might be the root cause.
You know, owner-wise, we've changed. And I will say this, when we went from Wayne Huizenga to now Stephen Ross.
And you saw right after that Parcells bolted pretty much.
Parcells bolted almost immediately. Dan Marino dropped when we had him as a
VP ops guy. I don't even know if that had anything to do with it or if he was even made for that position. You know what I mean?
I mean, I don't know.
I'm not even sure, but
I don't know. But I mean, the fact of the matter is we have had opportunities with several – I'm not going to say several. We had opportunities with, for instance, Jeff Fisher. I would have loved to have had Jeff Fisher as a coach. Loved to have had Jeff Fisher. But Jeff Fisher couldn't stay in Ireland because Jeff Fisher wanted to coach
Yeah, he wanted to Jeff coach. Fisher has control of his personnel in St. Louis. And again, and I've said this before, we do everything in pieces. We fire the coach and keep the GMs, and we keep the, then we get rid of the GMs but keep the coach. So we went through a whole list of 10 like GM candidates because they didn't want to come into South Florida and because they wanted to get rid of Philbin. Well, I guess they were smart. So then we finally get a GM that's worth it, but then we think maybe he's more of a personnel guy. So we need an operations guy. So we get Tannehill on, I mean Tannenbaum on. Now he's there for 1 year, so you're going to get rid of him? No, probably not. Now you're going to go fire the coaching staff, but you're going to keep Tannenbaum and Hickey till you realize that, well, this coach has only been here a couple years, but we still suck. So let's get rid of Tannenbaum and Hickey. But then we're going to go looking for GMs, but they're going to want to fire the new coach because they don't think he's good. They want their own guy. Dude, it's a freaking like circle. It's just running around chasing our tail. And this has been this way since Ross has been the owner. That's part of the problem. Ever since Ross has been the owner, this is the chasing our tail syndrome that we continuously do over and over and over and over again. So maybe just a 1-15 season will cause Ross to say, screw all this, I'm firing everybody and starting over. Because that's really what needs to happen.
I mean, that's true, but then again, you know, we also had a conversation when Ross come in there. The first thing he did was turn the organization into a circus by getting all these celebrities to buy into it.
Yeah, I hated that crap.
You know, it's like, this is football. This isn't the Inquirer. We don't all have inquiring minds. We don't want to know. We don't need to have tennis players buying in. We don't need Jimmy Buffett buying in. We don't need that stuff. This is a football organization.
Jimmy Buffett isn't even a freaking Dolphins fan. He sits out there in the New Orleans practices. Sorry, I just wanted to say that.
Well, not only that, dude, but I sit back and I think to myself, half of these people that bought in don't even know what about football. They don't even watch it. So what are they buying into it? We've just renovated this stadium, which I hear is very nice, but
it's going to be nice and empty.
Exactly. It doesn't matter because if you're not winning football games, especially in South Florida, you are not going to fill the stadium. End of story. That's it.
Oh, you'll fill it. You'll fill it with Patriots fans, Bills fans.
Jets fans. Oh, absolutely.
He'll fill it with Giants fans and on Monday Night Football.
I mean, I was thinking about going to the Dallas Cowboy game this year. I don't see that happening.
Why you go to go watch Brandon Weeding beat our team? Yeah, I don't
destroy us. Yeah.
With Terrence Williams and then we still get killed.
Could our defense and offense turn it around a little bit? I mean,
of course, even with this coaching staff, yes. Even with this coaching staff, this team, we could play better. I just don't know if we play good enough to beat anybody. That's the thing.
I mean, it's just – and the sad part is, Ron, the more games we lose, the less buy-in the players are going to have, like what you said before. And then once there's a complete split of that locker room, it's done. And we are awful close to getting that split.
The only reason you don't have huge infighting right now is both sides of the ball blow.
Right.
So there's no finger pointing. Yes. They're each looking at themselves saying, oh my God, I suck. Our side sucks. So defense can't sit there and say, oh, it's offense's fault. You know, it's defense's fault. They both were embarrassed yesterday. Absolutely embarrassed.
I mean, the defense just got torched. The offense... But when you look at the stats, of the game, you know, yesterday, it was kind of funny because when I looked at the stats, I said to myself, wow, there isn't a lot difference between the two teams in the game. And what I mean by that is, let's see, it's right here in front of me off of NFL Gamecast. You know, first downs, we both had 21, okay?
I don't even know how that's possible. That's crazy.
Exactly. Total plays, Buffalo 63, Miami 71. Total yards, Buffalo 428, Miami 391.
Yeah, but
passing.
It just doesn't tell. I mean, the stats definitely don't tell the story in this game.
It doesn't at all.
The score sure tells it, but not the stats.
I'm looking at penalty-wise. We had 6, they had 5. Passing, we had 300 yards passing, they had 277. You know, we rushed for almost the same amount of yards. But the only big difference, time of possession, we only had the ball 2 minutes less than they did. But the one category that just, I mean, bam, is turnovers. They had 0, we had 3.
Yeah, that's a big difference in the game, obviously.
You know, and I think that I mean, if I'm not mistaken, the three turnovers that we did have, they scored touchdowns on.
Yes, I believe you're correct on that.
So
and during the broadcast yesterday, I said that at halftime, as we were coming out to halftime, I said, okay, the formula to get back in this game, and we were down 27-0, is in the third quarter we need to score two touchdowns and hold them scoreless. First drive they come out, they drive for a while, they eat up like 7 minutes of clock, but they don't score. We go down, we score a touchdown. Then we're holding them again. We keep them held to a score. We keep them held scoreless. They're punting, and Aiken smashes into the kicker. Penalty.
Yep.
Guess what? A few minutes go by. We stop them again, and freaking I think it was Shelby with the hands to the face. If I'm not mistaken, it was Shelby with the hands to the face. We give it up again. Twice we stopped them, and then they scored. Of course, you know. And then we come back, and I think we throw an interception. On the tip pass, if I'm not mistaken, if that's when it was. And then it was just done. Then they scored a touchdown and it was over. But we started to kind of, you know, get into that formula a little bit. Yes, again, for the third game in a row, we played better second half, but they were playing with a huge lead. So those stats are so misleading. When you're playing with a lead that big, those are misleading stats. You're up 27-0 at halftime. You know, you're doing things a little bit differently, unless you're the Patriots. If you're the Patriots, you're trying to score 60 because that's how they are. You know, whether people like it or not, I disagree with running up the score using your starters. You want to use Garoppolo in there and run up the score all day, fine. But you're going to use Gronk and Brady up in there when you're up by 40, which is what they do. But they'll do that to us, dude. They'll try and score 70. They don't care.
Oh, dude.
You know what I mean?
You know, I saw a caption of a picture of Tom Brady, you know, pumping his fist. And the title was Patriots Back to Obliterating the Rest of the NFL. And, you know, as bad as it sounds, you know, once again, the Patriots are going to come out. They're going to sit there. They're going to obliterate teams because the NFL targeted New England, according to what everybody will think. Well,
remember I said this 3 months ago, by the way.
Yes, you did. Yes,
remember
you did.
Remember I said 3 months ago it was going to be a repeat of 07. I tweeted it, and I said it several times on this podcast. It's right in the audio. Go back and listen to a few of the first three, four shows if you want to listen to it. They were going to come out and say big F you to the world, or as I've heard some people say, Gronk you to the world. Yep. And they were going to be, he was going to be so mad. I assumed it was going to be starting week six, I think, when they came back when he came back from the 4-game suspension. I figured first few games are just trying to win, and then it's going to be, I'm running over you, I'm pissed. But of course, you know, he started off week one, but I said it would happen. I guaranteed it would happen. I was scared it would happen. And here we go. I just thought it wouldn't matter for us because I thought we'd be a good team. You know what I mean? I wasn't worried about what they did. I was just worried about what Miami did. I felt they had the talent to win, so let the Patriots do what the Patriots do. You know what I mean? And let Miami worry about Miami. But, that just didn't quite work out right for us, did it?
And you're absolutely right. I mean, I figured with that defense that we had, the more and more I looked at it on paper, which was exactly that, it's on paper. But when I looked at it, I said, you know what? If any team in the AFC East – has a chance to stop the Patriots, you know, roll through the AFC East and through the season, it's Miami. We have got a very good chance with that defense and the way the offense is predicted to play. We have a very good chance of sweeping New England this year. And everybody else was buying into that. The analysts were buying into it. You know, you see it on SportsCenter. People are talking, you know what? Miami could be the team to knock New England. This year, Miami could be the team to knock New England off their mountain. Well, dude, let me explain something to you. Miami hasn't even built the equipment to get to the top of the mountain yet.
They haven't even like put gas in the car to drive.
Dude,
to the
bottom. We can't afford to even get the car. Okay, we can't even afford. We haven't even started our clock. Like we're still in. The alarm clock hasn't gone off yet.
And everybody else is. That's exactly. You know what? That's a great example for Miami. It's like everyone else has been playing football for 3 weeks, and Miami's still hitting the snooze button, trying to wake up, get out of bed.
Yes.
I mean, seriously, that's what they're doing right now. And by the time they decide to wake up and maybe play some football, it's really going to be too late.
It is going to be too late.
And who is that? Who is that exclusively the fault of? Now, I won't say exclusively, but where does most of the blame have to go on that? has to go on the coach. There's no other place to put it.
You have no choice but to put it on the coach and the coaching staff, because the defense isn't up to playing the game that they should be playing. The offense isn't doing nothing, and all of that goes right back to Philbin, because ultimately he is the main speaker for both sides. And if the defense isn't fired up and the defense isn't playing the way they're supposed to be playing, then he needs to be going to the defensive coordinator and saying, "What are you doing? Get your head out of your backside and get this defense to play defense. This is ridiculous. What kind of call is that?" You know, and same thing with the offense. He needs to be going to Laser and saying, "Look, if this is the kind of stuff that you're going to call, I'm going to take over play calling. Because I used to do it."
Who used to take over? Who needs to say that?
That's what Philbin needs to say to Laser.
Except that Philbin doesn't do play calling. He didn't do play calling in Green Bay.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is as a head coach, your head's going to be on the chopping block first and foremost before anybody else's. Then if you're going to die, it needs to be by the hand of your, you know, the end of your own sword.
I get you. If you're gonna be found dead, your clip needs to be empty. Bottom line.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you're gonna find me on the side of the road dead, you better find me with a bunch of empty clips. Bottom line. Simple as that. And that's exactly it. That's not what Philbin's doing. He's just going along. Laser, talk about a stubborn coach. He will continue 3 weeks now, continuing to do the same exact things. First half, second half. And it continues not to work, and he continues to keep trying it anyway. It's unbelievable.
Which makes me wonder how in the world he survived in Philly.
Because he was a quarterback's coach. You know, he was a quarterback's coach. And it's been said by, and of course we always find this out on the end. Towards the end, you start to find this. It's been said by some that Laser has never been able to stick around more than 2 or 3 years with any organization, college or pro, that he doesn't really get along with people, with coaches, that him and Philbin haven't been getting along. Well, of course, you know, no one's getting along right now. They're all fighting because they're all aggravated that they're losing. The coaches are frustrated that they're losing, that they're about to get their job, and the players don't trust the coaches, so they could care less if they got fired. That's a bad scenario for good football. That doesn't all add up for a good record. It just doesn't.
It's easy to sing Kumbaya around the campfire when everybody's winning.
Yeah, well, that's not going to be a song you're going to hear from South Florida for a while, man.
It's going to be Let It Go.
Yes, that's the song they're going to sing around the campfire. Definitely. nice. Anything you want to say before we wrap it up, man?
No, man, I really hope this long plane ride from Miami to London gives a little bit of chance for, you know, a bunch of people on that team to actually do some soul searching and find out, you know, where they want to be at the end of the season. But I don't see it happening, man. I appreciate you having me back on. It's been a while, I know, but I'm happy to be back in Florida.
Finally.
But I'm not happy with the way our boys are playing in South Florida, just 100-something miles away, man. I'm pretty depressed about it.
Yep, man. I feel like we were sold a bad bill of goods, man. Kind of feel that way. And I bought into it and spread it out to the few that listen to me, that I felt we were going to be good. Maybe some people think I was the one that sold some of that bad bill of goods, but it wasn't just me, man. It was a lot of people. A lot of fans, a lot of analysts thought that Miami was going to be really good this year. We were all wrong. That's not a doubt. There's no, maybe it's just a bad start. No, we were all wrong. Simple as that. But if you guys want to get in touch with the show, Twitter's the best way to do it, at UnsquishTheFish. You can email me, unsquishthefish@gmail.com, if you'd like as well. I don't know when my next Rabble.tv broadcast will be, but hopefully in a few more weeks. It won't be for the Jets game, but hopefully in a few more weeks I'll do another Rabble out there. You can also catch me on the Next Fan Up podcast. You can find that on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio, Next Fan Up, with Pod Vader, where I represent the Dolphins with a bag on my head right now after all the crap I talked going into the season about how amazing we were going to be. I can barely show my face. Not that I show my face on a podcast, but I can barely show my face on there right now. It's very embarrassing. The guys are actually being fairly nice to me. I guess they almost feel bad. All right, everybody, we appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.